Go Loud presents Murder Most Irish. Find it first on the Go Loud app and on all major podcast platforms.
Welcome to this week's episode of Murder Most Irish. Imagine we did that every week.
No.
Hey, welcome to this week's episode of Murder Most Irish. But it's sponsored by tampons.
I wish tampons. Absolutely sponsors. Although I'm over tampons.
What's a brand of tampons?
What's Tampax?
Tampax.
I don't use tampons anymore.
No, that's the medication.
That's the medication. I don't use tampons anymore. I've stopped.
Why?
I'm going to be honest, and this is probably men are going to... I'm just sick of shoving things up my vag. I don't regularly... I'm a bus. I'm not boning anybody.
I'm sick of shoving things up my vag.
I am. Every month I'm like, I'm not doing this. And then I get this paranoia thing where I think I can't find the string.
Oh my God, I do this thing where I forgot that I've taken it out.
And then you're like, is it inside?
And then I... think I've got toxic shock syndrome.
And I'm Googling the symptoms of toxic shock.
No, I should be in the bathroom thrown up. There's not even a Google. Like, what are you talking about?
Immediately. Harlan into the toilet. Yeah, no, like, I just am over it. And fair play to anybody. And people are like, pants are gross. Listen, I really don't care. I clean myself and I change my pad reg. This is a colony. Just going to be like, what is this? But like, I just am over. I'm over. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's slightly degrading at this point. Like, I'm like, I don't want to shove stuff. Even when I'm doing it, because like, I'm not the most...
I'm not the most, and it's not like flexible or...
No.
My body is awkward.
Yeah.
At all times.
Yeah, same.
And all movements feel slightly laboured.
And I'm like, oh, afterwards. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's normal. I don't know if that should be making that noise when I put it in, but like, it is like, oh, come on.
My thing is just a mess.
And then there's just a little fucking thing like hanging out with you.
Yeah. Did you see Charlie XCX? Is that her name? Came out on stage and she was like, I got my period right beside the before the show. If you see my tampon string, there's nothing I can do about it.
She's right.
Yeah.
She's fucking dead right.
Yeah.
She can make better music.
And she's dead right. And she's dead
right. Do you know what? She should have... Remember that girl in L7?
L7 took her out.
Threw her tampon at a bastard who was yelling at her.
And it was... No, but you don't remember? It hung from the fucking stage. It hung from the racking.
Obsessed.
So she threw it and it went up into the air and it hung over the band.
If you threw yours, it would knock someone out. After a heavy flow...
Mine, of
there
course,
would be like...
I fucking full blown... Mine would be like, whoever hit would look like The Shining. Like, look like Carrie.
The guards are to be called. A girl I work with today was telling me, actually, this is a great story. It's not that crazy. I won't tell you anyway because I haven't seen you. So a lovely girl I work with called Shauna, who is just the sweetest person. Like, do you ever meet someone and you're like, I don't ever want you to date a man because he's going to ruin your life. You deserve better. She's the sweetest girl. But she was telling me that her sister was on a flight. No, her sister's friend was on a flight last week coming back from somewhere on a Ryanair flight. And someone had brought their Stanley cup and filled it with water and put it in the overhead, not in a bag, just shoved it into the overhead.
What the fuck?
And they hit turbulence and the thing flew open and the Stanley cup, there was so much water and obviously the pressure in the plane, it hit her and knocked her out cold.
Jesus.
Like, she got a massive concussion and she's out of work for like 2 weeks. I was like, somebody's getting sued. Just shoved the Stanley cup, like, didn't put it in a bag. Obviously it was just like, get up there, and then the thing flew up and it like knocked her out.
Well,
yeah, just, I don't know why I told you that, but I just wanted to say that.
Would like to say Stanley cups can last a fire, but they could apparently also kill you and being on a plane.
Everybody in my job has a Stanley cup, but I'm too lazy to carry them. I just find
so I have a Stanley cup, but it lives on my desk.
Yeah,
and I don't bring it anywhere.
Yeah, I just, everybody in work has them, but I'm like, this thing is so...
It just lives on my desk, but I have to, because I've recently, after being off for a month, I've recently gone back to work, and last week, on Friday, I came home and my lips were chapped. I was like, what's going
Aircon.
On?
Aircon.
Oh.
What?
I haven't drank a drop of water in 7 days. Like, not.
Full-blown desert situation.
Not a drippity drop of water.
Is it offensive to say dry as Gandhi's sandal? Is that dry offensive? Candy.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Dry as Gandhi's flip-flops, what we used to say when we were kids.
Dry as Gandhi's flip-flop.
Yeah, you say, her fanny is as dry as Gandhi's flip-flop.
Leave all of this in.
But like, Gandhi's flip-flop won't be dry.
Well, you weren't drinking water, like, at home, you mean?
I haven't drank any water. Like, in Sarah, 7 days.
You have
days.
A kidney problem. You need to drink water. Like, this, you know you've got a kidney problem, Sarah Jean.
Like, my piss was the same colour as that lamp.
Oh, my God, Sarah Jean.
And I didn't once for think, those chapped lips are due to the...
I thought it was going to be aircon because I know
no,
when I
just
in
when
my
I walk
job.
Right into my office, I just turn my aircon off, and the rest of it's just a great big open building.
Ah,
so there's
okay,
no aircon.
Okay, so there's no aircon.
And my new office is right beside a quarry. It's so cool. I have two on a Friday.
Love
they blow
quarries.
Up. I have two on a Friday. They blow the quarry up, and I hear the alarm, and I can feel the blow.
I fucking love that shit. I also love looking out of quarries. They're so fast because they're vast. You don't realize how big they are. Until you actually are, you're like, oh my God, it's so cool. But Sarah started a new job.
Hey, another new job.
And I also started a new job about a month ago. And hey, let me tell you this. Capitalism is a sick joke. None of us should work. We should all be living in the forest, eating grapes.
I know this is really pathetic, but in work all the time for the past, 8 days, I keep just going, I could be doing this with Emma. This would be better if Emma was here.
Your job?
Yeah.
Aww. Fine.
This is shite without Emma. Cool, I'll get you a job. You won't want one. If you think it's bad, the amount of men you're interacting with, I am the only woman.
Oh.
The only one.
No, I don't want that. But then there'd be two of us.
Yeah, true.
We could take on the world.
True. I have a toilet with a key.
Okay.
Because none of the men are allowed in there.
It's like when you go to Subway.
I have my own key
like,
for my toilet.
The key is attached to a shoe.
Yeah.
Bring the shoe back.
Bring the shoe back. My key is, like, I have a fob. Here. Here's my toilet key. Look,
see toilet
ladies' toilet.
Oh my God.
Ladies' toilets.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, I work with a lot of men, but I also work with, like, the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my life. Like, I'm working with, there's a scene in 30 Rock where Jenna is standing beside, what's the girl's name?
Oh, the blonde-haired assistant.
Cerie.
Yeah.
And Cerie is standing beside her and she says to Cerie, stand further away from me.
Or she says, do you want to be...
Are you an actress? No. Good.
Good. Yeah.
Like, I work with that level of beauty, but they're the nicest girls in the world. Like, they're fucking sweethearts. But yeah, we have jobs. I hate working. I hate my job, but I hate working. I hate the life of working.
Yeah, same.
I don't want to do this anymore. Yeah. Like, I was talking to a man in my village last week, and he's been in his job for 42 years.
Everybody in my job.
Hey, I'm going to kill myself before that happens.
Everybody in my job has been there for no shorter than 17 years. And then there are people on the floor. I think there's, like, I honestly think my job is a race of Benjamin Buttons.
Really?
There are people I interacted with over the last 8 days that have been in the company for 42 years. And they're still there and they're not retired. And they do not look like they...
They don't look that age.
Did you just walk off?
Is my cat driving you nuts?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Did you just walk out of school and straight into this job?
Clearly.
Because, honest to God...
But that's like in when you... Like jobs, like people who work in the ESV and stuff like that. They started those jobs and they were like 15.
I worked with the most wonderful man in IDL. His name was Eddie Balfe. He won't remind me saying it out. And he walked into his mum got him his job. So the day he finished school, he started his job in the bottling plant in what is now NCAD.
Right.
Was the original.
Oh, okay.
Powers bottling plant.
Oh,
Powers whiskey.
Okay,
so you know when
you
go into NCAD, they have the big...
Yeah.
Stills, pot stills, and they're all the originals from. He walked in there, and then when I was in IDL, he had been in IDL for 50 years on his retirement because he started at 15.
That's crazy.
And at 15 to 65, is that 50 years? Yeah.
Yeah, like that's fucking wild.
And we had a massive, because he was 50 years, so we had a massive like celebration for his 50 years.
That's very cool. But that is, I think that was the norm. Like my friend Lisa, who lives in Canada, her dad works for Johnson & Johnson, I believe. I don't know, he's definitely retired by now. But he had worked in that company since he was like 19 and he never had one single sick day. They gave him like an award for it.
An award? I'd want a
give
fucking
me money.
Book written about me.
Yeah, never had a sick day.
There would be a TED Talk.
Yeah. Like, how did you do this, sir? How did you do this, Mr. Murray?
Well, actually, COVID was started here and I may have
I may have done this. Yeah. But like, yeah, but I do think that was, that's very much the norm of a certain generation.
I'm
going to
say a thing.
Okay.
So my thing is, people didn't work as hard as people work now back then, Emma.
True.
There was a lot of just, I do this one thing.
Yes.
And I don't.
That is all I know how to do. Yeah,
and my wage and my salary is able to sustain me having an at-home wife and a mortgage.
That's wild.
And my three kids and my reasonably priced car.
I go on two holidays a year.
Yeah, that is like, honestly, you're the 50s, the 60s, all of those, like, they're, those jobs that people were hired to do then, and the, like, standard of living, like, that all was doable. Yeah. You could happily be like, I go to work every day I'm not double jobbing. Yeah. I'm not doing multiple tasks. And also, I'm not the caregiver of my children.
My wife is there.
My wife is there and she makes my lunch and she, I come home and my dinner's on the table and all of the stuff. Like, I came home today. You came home today. I came home today and Graham's in college. So I was like, right, what am I making Lily? Then I'm sorting out the dogs. Then I'm like making my own dinner after that. And that's all, you know, within the space of 2 hours of being home. And then you sit on the sofa and you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, I'm exhausted. And then it's like, right, I'll get up tomorrow and I'll my house hasn't been cleaned. I haven't, all of the things, because like that idea of like a two person family working, that's like, that happened in like the late 50s, early 60s.
This is the start of the 40s. So when World War II ended, just before World War II ended, they, all the women that had been put out to work because the men were overseas, they wanted that nixed immediately. They were like, we can't do this. So then that whole idea of man works 9 to 5 and woman looks after the children began. So we're living the same hours that people work and the same idea of work-life balance than they did post-World War II, and nothing has changed.
Yeah.
Except women are expected to do all the labor at home, work a full-time job, and most people can barely keep their heads above water. And then you've boomers being like, "These are all ungrateful."
You've also,
girl, like, you were able to buy a fucking 4-bedroom house on a fucking factory salary.
Yeah,
get fuck off.
Yeah, no, like honestly,
it's crazy.
I think that thing of like where people are like, "I've been here for like 50 years." That's dying out people move around. One, because that is the only way you can get a significant increase in your salary.
Yeah, of course.
Two, you, depending on how capable you become, or how, not even capable, because I think everybody, how confident you become in your belief in yourself, you're able to be like, no, I'll deliver these things and my boundaries are that. But that is very difficult when you're young.
Of course it is.
You walk into these great big jobs, you work, walk into, and you want to like be seen as like,
move your way self up.
And to do that, it's like, I won't leave before the boss.
Suck my dick. Like, I'm a going home. Like, I honestly have hit an age now where I'm like, okay, bye.
Like,
I've done my job.
Yeah, I have a balance. But even today, I was talking to somebody. I've got like some things I need to do on a shift. So I was like, I'll help and support and I'll change my week that week. And I'll do some like extra time. I don't get overtime because I'm on salary. And in the sentence with my manager, I was like, and I'll take the time back.
Yeah.
And he was like, no one ever. That's so refreshing. No one does that here.
Take it in lieu. Yeah.
And I was like, I will.
That's the thing. Like, about, like, I know it's easier said than done, but like, boundaries and jobs are so, if you're young and you're listening to this, I know you think you're going to get in trouble or your manager is going to fire you, but boundaries are so fucking important. And once you set them, you can be comfortable. You can be like, well, I've done that now and that's what I'm comfortable doing. Like, I've had to set boundaries in jobs before and it was very difficult for me because I was so terrified of, like,
I wasn't always like this. And it's that thing of being young. And the other thing is, if you've got a good manager, I remember one of the things that I learned from a manager that I had in Irish Distillers. And I used to do that. I would stay if they were staying because I directly worked with them. And he was like, why are you here? And I was like, oh, I've got things to do. And he was like, if you've got things to do still, then we need to look at like your capacity and what you're actually taking on.
Yeah.
And he was like, if I'm leaving and I'm not asking as the leader why people are still here and not being paid to be here, I'm not looking after my people.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. And so I always, like, from that moment on, when I ever got into any leadership roles, That was always a thing. I'd be like, sorry, why are you here? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, and it wasn't to be like, you know, did you not get your job
done? Did you not get your work done?
It's like, are you not able to get your work done?
Are you over capacity?
Yeah.
Are you stressed?
Like, is everything okay? Like, and sometimes you get people that are like, no, I just, you know,
have a few bits to catch up on.
Yeah, and I'm happy to stay here and get it done. And you're like, okay, but if that becomes like a regular thing.
No. Like, but you know how many managers are perfectly happy watching their staff do that. And then they're like, why are we losing staff constantly?
I just left.
Why can't we keep staff?
I just left a bullshit company that was the natural culture of
literally,
like,
you stay here until you fucking drop
it
out.
It wasn't even you stay here. It was like, we need more of them. We need more of them to take advantage of.
Jesus Christ.
To exploit. And that was openly said in Ops meetings.
It's so fucking gross.
Yeah. And it's like, no, like, one, there's something wrong. Two, they're all doing it. So there's definitely something wrong. And three, that's called... what's it called? Wage theft. Because you're stealing that, you're stealing their time. Like, this is wage theft.
Wage theft is crazy.
Yeah. And people, like, when you're in companies, it's always taught about from the other side. Yeah. It's always discussed from the employer's side.
Yeah.
It is happening to you as an employee.
Of course it is.
And it is important to set your boundary and be like, no, that's wage theft.
Yeah.
Like, and then you're in, like, management office and managers are going, we need to watch out for him because he's using words like wage theft.
It is wage theft.
Like, maybe you have a problem, it's wage theft.
Maybe you need to stop sucking on boots.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to stop marinating some docks and sucking on them to understand that these are human beings with lives and things that they have to do and money that they have to spend. But let me ask you, speaking of money, how do you feel about this?
Go. Have you heard about this?
To go on, seen about this? So last week, Colin and I went to Bursals and we were talking about winning the lottery.
Yeah.
And I said,
oh, what's he, what
so before,
he say?
Okay, so I said, if I won the lottery, I give you, before I could finish that sentence, he said, I give you $500,000. And I said, okay. And he's like, and then I give $500,000 to, like, and rhymed off names of people who he has known a wet week. So I said, you're giving $500,000 to me and Johnny Magoo that you met 4 months ago in a job. Do you think that's fit? Me?
No.
Johnny Magoo?
No.
And I said, I'm glad you stopped me, because I was going to say 10 million. Now you're getting nothing. If I hypothetically win this lottery, you're getting fucking jack shit. You get the same amount that I give the fucking one of the caretakers of this building.
Like,
I don't understand.
And was he okay with, like, that?
I was like, excuse me? You're giving
him
$500,000, by the way, which will kill him. He will die.
Like,
you give that man €500,000, you will be going to his funeral next Tuesday.
Yeah.
You're giving him $500,000? And me? Emma?
And how did he feel about this when
he couldn't understand what my issue was.
I tell you what, Colin Foy, you're a miserable mean bastard.
Couldn't understand.
What would your mother say for this type of behaviour?
He was like, Anna, buy everybody a house. Who's everybody? Buy me a house. Who are these people? Like, I was so taken aback by the whole thing. And I was like,
but you know Colin, right? Colin is so afraid of offending anybody.
That's true.
Colin would have no money left.
He'd have no money.
And he'd be like, sure, everybody loves me. All right, do they?
He'd be giving it to the security guards at work. I know he would.
He would, yeah.
But I was like, you're giving half. And he couldn't understand what I was saying. I was like, I've been your friend for 20 odd years. I've seen you at your worst. I've seen you come in here at 2 o'clock in the morning off the chest to try and piss in my corner. He's going to cut that out. I was like, and you're giving me $500,000 and you're giving fucking Alcoholic McGee over there $500,000. I don't know, I just thought that was shitty. I just wanted to have that conversation.
That is shitty.
Do you understand where I'm from? He couldn't.
What would I give you?
What would you give
me? You know the answer to this.
Half.
Yeah.
That wasn't his answer. Then he tapped on, I'll buy everybody a house. Stop buying everybody a house. Buy me a house and give me more. No. Couldn't get it.
Don't understand.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to say. Do you have anything else to add to this conversation?
I'd just like to say it's a big day for SJ. She's got her period.
Hey!
It came in fast and strong.
Period
time,
baby. I was
not expecting it.
Oh, really?
My new period symptoms are I get the most painful breast.
Oh, you've got
pain.
The boob things.
And it's so intense. It's like someone's stabbing me. Even now.
Like, I got up one morning and put a t-shirt on and nearly started crying. Oh, the pain was so bad.
It's like someone is stabbing me right in the center of the nipple.
It's rotten. Have you really started to get that?
Yeah, I've never had that before.
I've had that my entire, like, that's one of the main symptoms I've had since I started getting my period.
Like, anyway, that's problem number one. Problem number two is I'm letting my mustache grow.
Why are you letting your mustache grow?
Because I want to wax it.
Oh.
Because I've been dermablading.
So you're going to wax? How are you feeling about that?
Oh, it's irritating the shit out of me.
It doesn't look.
Oh, it does look. I've got like a couple of hairs there.
Ah, Sarah.
Lily said to me, I was messing with her and I kissed her back and she said, you've got a beard. And I was like, sorry. She's like, a little bit spiky. I was like, Lily, you don't get the fuck out of this house.
Oh my God.
I literally I was like that scene where I'm like,
free.
I literally was like, don't look at me, I'm a monster. It's killing me. Grown
so
beard.
Are you going to get it waxed or are you going to wax it yourself?
I waxed part of it last night.
Okay.
And then other bits of it weren't long enough. So I'm trying to get it all fucking done. But it's ear. I can't stop. I know when work people are looking at me because I'm just.
Are you like this?
I'm sticking my tongue at the corner of my mouth and I'm rubbing the shit out of each side.
Sometimes I try and pull that hair out my fingers and I'm like,
I've got one hair here on the side. Like, it's driving me.
So when do you think you'll be able to wax it?
I'm hoping that this evening when I go home I'll have a good bash. That one definitely is coming. That's long enough, isn't it?
See that little one there. Yeah. Oh, you get that. And we'll ask you, what kind of wax are you using?
Oh my God, wait to tell you. I got
you get the melty?
I got slick wax.
What's that?
It's a, like, waxing system at home.
Okay.
So it's the little wax pearls.
Oh, the little pot thing. Yeah.
And a little silicone cup.
Nice.
And a little thing. And you put it in the microwave.
And then you just go...
I did do it last night and it was very satisfying.
See, when I do that, my lip goes... It goes all red and up.
I'm super excited about it.
Shit, will you send me a picture?
It's big day in Perth. I did last night. I should have sent you the ones last night. There was a good
just
few
in
there.
Just get a good one today.
They're not heavily rooted, but... Yeah.
Oh yeah, we should do housekeeping.
Housekeeping!
Yeah. Hey everybody, come to our show... Murder Most Irish, live at the Laughter Lounge. I'm reading the poster. 24th of July, 2025. The tickets are €25. The doors are 7 p.m. The show is 8 p.m. I don't know if I said that, but it's in the Laughter Lounge. We would love you to come. Colin's already started doing stuff for it and it seems really, really fun. We're going to have a good time. We're just going to have a laugh. I'm not going to take it super seriously and we're just going to have fun.
Good time, Bobby.
Because I had a dream about it the other night and I was like,
what?
I was just dreaming about doing the show and I was really anxious in my dream and I was like, okay, just stop this. It's nonsense. We've done it enough times now to know what we're doing. Plus, Colin's going. And Colin is actually going to DJ. I'll throw up. Colin's going to DJ at the start.
So oh, yeah. He's actually a very good DJ. Who would have thunk it?
Oh, congratulations to Kelly and her beautiful wife, Ange, on renewing their vows last week. We went to Hen's Teeth. Hello to everybody we met from listened to the podcast. I apologise. I drank an entire bottle of Prosecco by myself, I was fucked. So I do apologise if I was obnoxious or anything. I'm very, very sorry. The fear the next day. But thank you so much to Kelly and Ange. We had a lovely day and we love them. Please come to our show.
Oh yeah, come to our show. Emma will get really drunk. She's on antidepressants. It makes her crazy.
Please come to our show.
And maybe Colin will tell another story about cucumber.
Who knows? But yeah, we really would appreciate it. And we love you. And we thank you to everybody who has bought tickets so far. You are the best. And also, as Sarah always says, thank you to everybody who continues to support the Patreon.
Yeah, no, honestly, thanks to everybody that continues to support
Patreon.
Thanks to everybody that doesn't support anything but just listens to the podcast.
Fair play to you and thank
you. Because it's fucking hard going out there.
It is. Life's difficult.
Like, Jesus
Christ. Have you been listening to any podcasts recently?
I just listen to books could kill, if books would kill, books that kill.
Oh, books could kill, yeah.
I just love Peter.
I love him.
I love Michael too, but I love the two of them together.
They're so good together.
Peter is so funny.
He is genuinely so funny.
Like,
is he a bit of a ride?
I think he must be, but his voice. Honest to God. Stunning. You know that episode of Black Books where she's like ringing, Fran.
He has a beautiful voice. Listen to If Books Could Kill. It's a great show.
What was that one piece of feedback we got in the Spotify feedback?
Too many inside jokes. A man said we had too many inside jokes. Very sorry to that man. Do not know who that man is, but apologies for that.
I would not know that man. I am sorry to that man. Fuck that man. Do you know what? Inside jokes aren't for you.
They're called inside jokes for a reason.
Yeah, and everybody else that listens to the podcast gets the inside jokes.
Maybe they do.
Because they've been here
long enough.
And we're not trying to get any new people to listen, apparently.
No, we are. So. New people, please listen and come to our show. Do you have anything else? Do you have anything else, my beautiful friend?
No.
Luggage of fun.
I had a whole thing to bring us on a Debbie Downer.
Oh, go on.
I'm just really sad today about Gaza.
Oh, my mum rang me earlier and was really upset about it as well.
I'm sobbing my heart out today.
I don't even...
So I was. You remember that little boy I told you about? The little boy that was on the roof. Oh, he got blown. So that little boy, I get his name, but that little boy, he got me and Emma were talking about it, and I was like, it just really affected me. But he was in obviously a targeted bomb, and he got blown onto the roof. Now, when I was, my understanding of it, he was in, the building he was on was the building that had blown up. No, that's not the case.
No?
He was in the building across the road, and the bomb was for his father, and he was sitting on his father's lap. And he got blown out of the building that he was in onto the roof across the road of his house. And all 15 members, other than his mother,
are dead.
Dead. And he is two. And the oldest, other than the father, in that 15 is 13. And the rest are all younger than 13. And I was just like, so upset today watching it.
I know. Like, I saw the video, yeah.
So anyway, to like bring everything down.
No, you're not bringing anything. Fuck Israel. You're not bringing anything down.
Free Palestine forever. And there, I know it feels juvenile and kind of like no one's listening, but keep talking about it. Keep sharing it. Keep doing everything that you can to keep it in the news.
Yeah. Because don't forget, because this is what the thing, they want you to look away. Don't look away. Like, there is an active genocide happening, and there is no ifs, ands, or buts about this. There is no two sides. This is an active genocide. It is an act of ethnic cleansing, and we are watching it happen in real time, and I don't know how to comprehend it, and all we can do is just talk about it and try. Like, fair play, actually, I will just say, the Murder Capital, that Irish band, refused to play in Germany because the German authorities weren't allowing people to put Palestinian flags anywhere because, you know, they're great at being on the right side of history twice, aren't they? Doing a great job of supporting two separate fucking genocides.
Yeah.
But they spoke out and said, we're refusing to play in this venue. And they did a free show in the car park for people.
Wow.
So just, I know it's, people are like, you know, they're like, that doesn't mean anything. It's virtue signaling. It's not virtue signaling. It's called standing 10 toes down and understanding that the little things that we can do to say, fuck that regime, fuck what is happening currently, and fuck Israel, is important.
Mm.
And especially as Irish people, like, aside from the ridiculously dumb far right, we have a majority of people in this country, and I need to keep reminding myself, it is a majority of people in this country who want the best for other people and who understand that this is a genocide and support Palestine.
Isn't it funny that in a week, for me, people who have the Irish flag hung up in their house immediately become like a red flag.
Literally.
Like, and that's just overnight.
Overnight. It's like, I don't know.
I wouldn't have even noticed it before. I wouldn't have even thought about it.
And now I'm like, what does that mean?
What does that mean? Is this still your St. Patrick's Day flag that you can take down?
Why do you have, like, and that's shit, because it's like, it's always kind of, I'm not going to lie, it's always slightly been a red flag for me sometimes, where I'm like, it's wherever you go past British homes and you see the Union Jack.
Yeah.
It's that kind of staunch nationalism where it's almost like, we don't want anybody except white Irish.
Yeah.
And that's worrying. But at the same time, like, I'll go past a house and I'm like, oh, it's just an Irish flag. They're just supporting Ireland. But now, I actually think, are you talking about the house on Ballier?
Which
one?
That
has a big Irish flag in the window.
No, but there's one on the corner.
There's one down near where Gara is, and they have a massive, the whole window is just an Irish flag. And I'm like,
yeah, no, what does that mean?
That's fair, right? But yeah, it is sad. But then I was going past an apartment the other day, and they had the Irish flag and the Palestinian flag. So it's like, you can kind of be like, oh, I understand what you are. I understand where you're coming from. But fuck the far right. Fuck Israel. And I know people just probably think we're just saying words, but we've never meant anything more in our lives than fuck Israel. And I feel so bad for Jewish people who are like, now being roped in with this bullshit, where they're like, we do not agree with any of this bullshit that is currently happening. Also, you know what? I wasn't even going to give it breath. I don't know if I... What's going on with Kanye West?
Dude.
What's happening?
Have you seen that compound?
I saw something about a compound, and then apparently he's got a new music video.
I haven't seen the music video.
Okay.
What's the music video?
Like, I think they're all dressed up like Hitler or something. I don't really understand what's happening.
Like,
I just feel like, I don't even know if this is mental health related anymore. I just might think the only way he can get attention now is this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but what if you made good music?
Remember when you used to make good music?
Hey, what if you were talented again?
Remember that?
Hey, why don't we release a bop?
Why don't we go to the bops, man?
Just release a banger.
Yeah.
And like, all good people, everybody will forget all your past indiscretions because people love doing that. But instead, you're doubling down. Building a Nazi compound.
The compounding. People are like, we don't know what happens there. But every now and then we just hear men chanting. large groups of men chanting. And there was like adverts up around the area for like
telling people to come who look like P. Diddy.
Yeah.
I don't know why I gave a breath. I was just trying to figure, I don't know what's going on. Like, I just feel like we're in hell. And then people, what's frustrating as well is people are like, I hate anti-Semitism. Like, I hate it. Because now people are in the comment section going, Kanye was right. No, he wasn't. Kanye wasn't right.
No.
No, he wasn't. Anyway.
Also.
Listen.
He brought, like, he's trying to sell a fucking Nazi t-shirt.
Yeah, he had the one with the big swastika on the front of it. Hey, Black Flag, stop touring.
Like.
Stop touring, Black Flag.
Why are they touring?
Not in a million years. It's not Black Flag. It's Greg Ginn and like four other people that he found somewhere. Anyway, they just popped up on my thing. Okay, so there is everything.
Hey, Colin, tell us about the Patreon.
Sure thing, Lily Pops. Hey there, MMI fans. It's me, Colin, and do I have news for you. It's all going down over at www.patreon.com/murdermostirish, where we've totally revamped our Patreon offering for you mega fans. That's right. Now all of your favorite Patreon stuff can be found in one place as we bring you our MMI Super Show exclusively for Patreon, featuring all the usual banter and chat between Emma and Sarah Jane, plus me thrown into the bargain, along with Lily's Tales, Maximilian's Bell Bag, and some surprises along the way. But that's not all. Every single week, due to popular demand, we will be bringing you a full-length story, whether it be Miscellaneous Most Irish for those cases that just don't fit on the main show, Murder Most International for those cases you guys have been crying out for, or even Music Most Awesome, where we talk about our favorite albums. But wait, there's even more! How about MMI Drive, the fan favorite podcast show where Emma and Sarah Jane drive around Dublin talking about all sorts of shite, plus our monthly Ask Me Arse segment where you get to pick the brains of the girls and maybe even ask me a question or two. So what are you waiting for? Come on over to www.patreon.com/murdermostirish and join in the fun for only €6 a month.
Give my mammy €6.
Okay, so this week we are doing part two of the Olivia Dunlea case. Olivia was murdered by her partner of 6 weeks and a day.
Are we not calling him his partner?
Her, whatever the fuck he was. So she was murdered by him, and my references are the same as last week, except there's one more reference from a piece that the Irish Examiner did that's very, very good that I'm going to talk about in this. Which focuses on how... Oh, I'll explain when we go through. Also, shout out to T.G. Cahir.
T.G. Cahir, killing it.
Because I'm telling you, they are doing a series called Maru Inner Mask. And this is where I'm getting... I've done two cases from it so far. Three, I think. No, two. And they are doing a fantastic job on the documentaries. They are covering cases that kind of like haven't been that prevalent in the media.
Yeah.
And they're giving the families of these people a voice, and they're doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, they are.
Just shout out
to them. And they're currently petitioning to get the same spend that RTE gets.
Which they fucking should.
Yes.
Anyway, okay, we're going to start. Okay, so this is part two of Olivia Dunlea's case. Here we go. So on the 20th of February, 36-year-old Darren Murphy was charged with the murder of Olivia Dunlea. Murphy stood in front of Judge Leo Malone in Cork District Court and did not respond when the charges were read to him. He only nodded to confirm his name. Murphy was given free legal aid, and it was Solicitor Emmett Boyle. And Emmett Boyle told the court that he was concerned for his client's welfare and requested a psychiatric assessment.
Have we talked about Emmett Boyle before?
I don't think so. That name doesn't sound familiar to me.
Sounds familiar to me.
So as Olivia's family, friends and hometown reeled from the loss of such a beloved person, Gardaí began piecing together evidence. They knew how Olivia had been murdered, but now they needed to figure out why. Because a man did it and he's a piece of shit. On the 14th of May 2014, Darren Murphy's trial began. Mr. Justice Paul Carney was presiding over a jury of 7 men and 5 women. Olivia's family sat in the courtroom and Darren Murphy was in front of them, appearing nonchalant until the jury entered. He was sitting on the bench right opposite us and didn't bat an eyelid, Anne told the Irish Examiner. He looked straight at us, sitting back with his arms stretched over the bench. He wasn't holding his head in shame or anything. But when the jury came in, he put his head in his hands.
Oh.
Which seems par for the course, because he was doing that thing when our house was burning down. Where he was like, no, even though he'd done it.
Yeah.
While Murphy was asked how he pleaded to the charges brought to him, he told Justice Carney, quote, not guilty, but guilty of manslaughter. So we're going to talk about a law in this case that if it doesn't get changed, I'm going to turn into a Parisian and start burning shit down.
I think we should all turn into Parisians.
So Olivia's family sat in the courtroom and heard for the first time in graphic detail how she had died. So they hadn't been told what had happened to Olivia. What?
Did they not have a police liaison officer?
They had a police liaison officer, but because due to whatever legal stuff, they couldn't tell them what had happened to her. All they knew was that she had, her death was a murder. But they didn't know
that
about
this. That doesn't seem right.
They didn't know about the stabbing. This information had not been passed to them pre-trial for legal reasons.
Lie.
The Dunleys were devastated once again as solicitors spoke clinically of the horrendous death Olivia had experienced. Her sister Amanda said it's really hard to sit in those situations because they're talking about Olivia like she's just something, a fact on a piece of paper. And she was like, I just wanted to stand up and say that's my sister. Like, that's my flesh and blood, you know. So Murphy's team decided to use the defense of provocation. They told a packed courtroom that the reason Olivia had been stabbed and then burned alive was because her and Murphy had had an argument via text. So in parentheses, I wrote, Gardaí trawled Olivia and Murphy's phones, or sorry, just Murphy's phone, and found no such evidence. Instead, they found texts prior to Olivia's death, which they described as good-natured. However, Murphy's team still insisted on provocation. Murphy's solicitor told the court that Murphy had experienced extreme jealousy over a man he believed Olivia had been seeing behind his back. Once again, zero evidence of this.
So they just introduced
it. So they were just like, it's provocation. She was mean to him, so he killed her. She was cheating on him, so he killed her. Murphy told Gardaí that he and Olivia had been getting on incredibly well the night that she was murdered. But when they arrived back at Olivia's home, they had had a row. The reason they'd had a row, this is what Murphy said, is that Olivia had taken her clothes off, laid down in her bed and told Murphy to get out as another man named Foss would be coming over. Murphy said Olivia then threw her keys at him. None of this happened.
None of this happened.
Olivia's family told Maru in a mask that not only did they have to listen to Murphy try and justify murdering Olivia, but they also had to listen to him lie about her and her lifestyle and the type of person that she was. It was the hardest thing we ever had to sit through, Olivia's mother told Maru in a mask. His evidence was dragging Olivia's name through the mud, and it was lies. Murphy insinuated that Olivia had been seeing various men in the town. The Gardaí, however, stated concretely that this was not true. Having checked the phone belonging to Foss, they did not find Olivia's contact number in the phone. So there was nothing.
That's not true.
Yeah, let alone any messages between the two.
If it was true.
Even if she was. You don't get to stab her six times, and burn her body, motherfucker. Ugh. Olivia's phone could not be checked as Murphy had thrown it down the toilet after stabbing Olivia.
Down the toilet?
He put it in the toilet, yeah. Murphy told Gardaí that he and Olivia had been laughing and joking all night, but an argument soon erupted when she told him another man was coming over. Not true. Yeah. Murphy said he had been cheated on before and he wasn't going to let it happen again, that if he couldn't have Olivia, nobody would.
Oh, okay, yeah. So that's her fault, yeah.
They stood in a court of law and read this out as a reason for that woman, 36-year-old woman with three children,
to
being
be
dead.
Stabbed to the point where she was paralysed
and then
burned to death.
And knew her house was burning down around her. So he said, I can't have her.
Nobody else is going to have her.
So he walked downstairs and took a knife from the block in the kitchen. He then went back upstairs and held a pillow over Olivia's head. He leaned his entire body and held her down. I grabbed the knife and I stuck it in her, he told Gardaí. I just leaned with whatever I had on top of her. I had my knees on either side of her. I remember the knife was there. I don't know why, I just grabbed it. She knows how much I love her. I don't know why she did it to me. Brother, you've been with this woman for 4 to 6 weeks. So he's like, I love her so much. I had to kill her. And his team are like, yeah. Can everybody see why he did it? Like, I know we've had this conversation before and I know people have to have jobs. I know they have to have jobs and I know we have to have solicitors and lawyers. Just go work on a farm instead. Because if this is the shit that you are bringing to a courtroom, to be like, the reason this man killed, it, technically what they're saying is, it's her fault.
Yeah.
Hey guys, hey, it's her fault. Go work on a farm. Get some horses. Do something else. These people are, I'm sorry, they're scum. Like, it's just so frustrating. And I understand that they have to do it. I get it. But at the same time, I'm like, hey, grow some strawberries.
I'm growing strawberries currently.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Until the mice so then, get them. Mice get them. So then he put the pillow over her head and then he stabbed her through the pillow 6 times.
Through the pillow.
So obviously he didn't want to look at her. So he's like, put the pillow over her head and then stabbed her through the pillow. It was one of the wounds paralysing her. Her last words to Murphy were, "What about my children?"
Oh, Jesus.
Murphy Christ. Ignored her and instead found a lighter, set fire to the quilt on her bed. He then walked downstairs to the kitchen, set fire to a kitchen roll and left the house. When questioned by the Gardaí as to whether the fire was to conceal what he had done to Olivia, he told them, quote, "No, I knew I was going to get caught. I just didn't want the kids to see her."
So burn down all of their memories.
Burn down their entire house with their ma in it?
Like, well, also with all of their memories.
They have everything. No, nothing. They have nothing.
Like, they, and I know we spoke about this last week, but that's just that, like, it's not the one thing that stays with me. But it's
a sucker punch.
Like, it's the thing of, like my friend Leslie, she won't mind me saying this, her father died when she was 11, and she has a shirt of his. And it's no longer a shirt. It doesn't even, look, like, it just is a piece of material. And she sleeps with it. It's really important to her. And the idea that she wouldn't have that.
Devastating.
After, like, someone, like, this woman had kids who were, like, Lily's age.
Yeah. Like, and for him to be like, I was thinking of her children.
No, you weren't.
No, you weren't.
Thinking of yourself, and you were trying to hide the fact that you stabbed this woman to death.
Because you threw her, and then you threw her, anyway. So here we go with the sob stories.
And he threw her phone down
the toilet.
Not because he was trying to, the story that he'd made up in his head, when he went and looked at her phone, never happened.
Never happened.
And there was no one texting this woman.
He was like, I gotta get rid of this phone.
Yeah. So I gotta hide the fact that this woman was never cheating on me.
Murphy's defense told the court that he had spent time in a school where he had been sexually assaulted and had previously
tried. Lots of people have been sexually assaulted and they don't do this shit.
So he'd previously tried to complete suicide following the breakdown of a prior relationship. I don't care. The court was also told that Murphy informed Gardaí that he'd stopped taking his antidepressants prior to the night in question.
Did he?
So that you
when
think.
When are you coming off yours so I can be prepared?
Antidepressants. I don't know what his defense team thought the jury would think antidepressants do. But they don't make homicidal people less homicidal.
No.
That's not. This is so frustrating. This case.
Make sad people less sad.
Less. So S.C. Thomas Creed for the prosecution spoke to the jury and told them that Murphy knew exactly what he was doing. Provocation does not happen over an hour. He was in the house for about an hour. It's instant and does not contain concise thought patterns. Murphy stabbed Olivia, set her house on fire, drove her car to the town, threw her keys in the river, and then went home.
Put her phone down the toilet.
He drove back to Olivia's and watched her house burn down whilst playing the grieving, upset boyfriend. He had a plan.
Yeah.
Creed told the court that at any point during the violent incident and the fire, Murphy could have called the Gardaí, he could have called an ambulance and the fire brigade, but he chose not to because he wanted Olivia Dunley dead. Her mother breaks my heart because her mother said in the documentary, she was like, I know she was, he had paralysed her, but she said, I would have, if he just called an ambulance, I would have looked after her for the rest of her life.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
She was like, I would have taken care of her. Her mother breaks her heart. She was like, I would have taken her to the home and looked after her. She was like, the bastard wouldn't even give us that.
Oh.
Like, it's fucking shocking. And then she said, like, they lived in Passage West. And she was like, I told myself I would never step foot in Passage West ever again. And she never did. She's like, I want nothing to do with that area. Like, this man has devastated these families. Like, it's just, it's incomprehensible. And then you have these fuckers being like, but she was mean, maybe she cheated.
Like,
so in his closing statements, Thomas Creed said that Murphy had accepted he killed Olivia, but it's up to the jury to decide if he's to be found guilty of manslaughter or murder.
If you don't tell me this motherfucker's done for murder, when I tell you, I'm gonna fuck this laptop out the window.
Creed asked the jury to consider not only Murphy's actions in this horrific attack on Olivia, but his behaviours afterwards, to set her house on fire and not get help. These are the actions of a man who knew what he was doing. It was not frenzied, it was calculated and thought out.
And he's right.
Yeah. He then acted as if he had not known what had happened to Olivia, crying and screaming outside her home as it burned down, pretending to make phone calls to her and the Garda station, giving the Gardaí clothes that he had in fact not been wearing the night of the murder. So Michael Delaney, SC, spoke on Murphy's behalf, telling the jury they cannot make their decision based on their disgust towards Murphy's actions or character. Instead, they must make a decision based on fact. He told the jury that if they believed Murphy intended to kill Olivia, that they must accept this was under provocation and find him guilty of manslaughter.
Why must they accept that?
This was his argument. He asked that they consider Murphy's background and how Olivia's actions would affect him.
Sorry.
Was Olivia trying to pick a fight with Darren? Delaney asked the court. And by what means did she choose to pick a fight? He further asked, did she set out to goad him by reference to a man she knew that she had been intimate with before?
Sorry.
That's what he said in the court.
Sorry.
Her family had to sit there and listen to that man say the reason your daughter is dead, not only dead, murdered, paralysed, murdered and burned alive is because maybe she was mean to him. And then he tells the jury, yeah, you just, if you think that, manslaughter. Hey, how about I burn your house down? I don't know. And it is a law. It is a law. I'll read about it. I'll tell you more about it. So the jury said, suck my balls, Michael Delaney SC. And after 4.5 hours, they returned with a verdict of guilty of murder by a majority of
4.5 hours is too long. An hour. 20 minutes. Just 2 seconds.
Now.
Yeah.
Guilty. Justice Clardy handed down a life sentence to Murphy and a month later handed down a 7-year sentence for arson to run concurrently. Carney himself noted that the 7-year sentence did seem rather irrelevant as it will run adjunct to the murder sentence. But nonetheless, Murphy had to be punished for his actions after murdering Olivia. Not only that, the destruction of her home, her children's home, and the loss of all their valuables and memories. So Olivia's mother, Anne, read her impact statement to the court as Murphy sat there, no remorse, stone-faced, didn't give a fuck. On February 17, 2013, my family's life changed, but beyond repair. No parent should have to bury their child in these circumstances. It is not natural in the circle of life. Since the killing of our daughter, we've been living our own life sentence of anger and grief, sickened by how depraved and disgusting a human being can be. Olivia was 36 years old. She loved life and everything it had to offer. The sparkle in her eyes and radiant smile displayed this vibrancy, which was also reflected in her work as a play school teacher. Olivia had so much kindness and love to share, but this was stolen from her. How do you console a child who wants to be at their birthday party and confirmation? How do you tell a child they have no home and all their possessions have been destroyed by a deliberate act of evil? Although the Dunlea family knew nothing could bring Olivia back, they took solace in the fact that Darren Murphy would be in prison for taking Olivia from them. This solace would be short-lived, however, as a number of weeks later, Murphy's team appealed the sentence. It was found that Judge Carney had erred in his explanation of the definition of provocation to the jury, and a high court accepted the appeal.
Sorry.
In February 2015, his next court case began. Olivia's family were devastated.
Did he get out of prison?
Three of them. He had three trials.
Did he get out of prison?
Yeah. They had to sit through another trial with the details of Olivia's murder read out in detail for a second time. On appeal, Murphy's conviction was overturned, with his team citing that certain evidence should not have been placed in front of the court.
Like what?
So basically they were, when we go back to it, they were saying that there was, like, it made his, the evidence before that made his character look bad. His character is bad. His character is bad. He's a bad person. Why would that evidence not be brought forward? But they were like, it was irrelevant to what was going on. I don't know. I don't understand the law. And I hate everything.
What things did they say? That
basically, I presume they didn't go into detail because there wasn't much about it. But they presume it was just about, like, his previous relationships and how he had been possessive with people and all that stuff. And they were like,
isn't the law insane?
But, like, that's a pattern, friends. That's a pattern.
Do you remember that man who was, what was that lady who went missing who was pregnant and they've never found her body? Is that Fiona Pendergrast?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he moved to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
He was her partner.
Mm-hmm.
And his then partner in Canada found videos of herself where he had drugged her, put makeup on her to make her look like she was dead, and then sexually assaulted her. And in the court in Canada, they weren't allowed to introduce evidence that his previous partner had gone missing and her body had never been found. Yep.
The law is crazy. Like,
isn't that pertinent to know?
That's a pattern. That's a pattern. Why are we not allowed to... Patterns are the basis of science. Why are we not allowed to talk about patterns?
And she also wasn't allowed to introduce that he had said to her in a violent eruption that he would get rid of her like he got rid of his last partner. And that was not allowed to be introduced into court.
That's insane. I don't know. And it's very frustrating. And this gets more frustrating.
Oh, no.
So, The Dunleys were beside themselves, terrified they would have to see the man who took their daughter from them in the outside world. So, in 2017, 2 years after his conviction was overturned, a second trial was held for Murphy, and this ended in a hung jury. The jury of 5 men and 7 women could not come to an agreement, and he was remanded in custody until a new date could be agreed for a third trial.
A hung jury!
A hung jury! He did. What are you talking about? He stabbed her 6 times and burned her gaff down with her inside of it. What the fuck are you talking about? A hung jury. Sarah.
And he says he did
it. I don't know. 3 trials. These people had to go through 3 trials.
Are we the mad ones?
No, we're not. We're completely sane. 3 trials and 2 appeals. They had to go through. These poor people. Like, it's actually horrific. So he's a hung jury. He was remanded in custody. So his team continued to argue for provocation. And that in essence, what had happened to Olivia was her own fault. That Murphy, although guilty, could not be held accountable.
What?
That's basically what provocation is. That's what provocation is. By the time Murphy's third trial had come along, not only were Olivia's family completely distraught, but the state had spent €116,000, this is not including his free legal fee costs, on trying to convict a man who openly admitted to murdering a woman. He said, I did this. And they said, but she was mean. And 12 people on a jury went, I don't know who to agree with here. Hung jury. Hung jury. What are you talking about?
Like yesterday I was out of Hoth. I just like to say, if it's sun, I feel the people that live in Hoth, I apologise. Right? And every scumbag in Dublin heads to Hoth on a sunny day.
They do.
And this, me and Lily and Graham were sitting on the green in Hoth, and this man walked up with his girlfriend.
Okay.
And when I tell you, I have never seen somebody who was so unbelievably not with it and irrational.
Okay.
I feared for her safety, and I immediately was like, that woman, if she doesn't die now, is going to die and he will kill her.
Oh God, Sarah.
Right? And he was like unhinged. He was on the phone to somebody. He was at least 300 to 400 meters away from me. I mean, people were just like stopping. And he was coming towards the path that we were sitting on. So I was like, we're moving, because I didn't want anything to happen with me, Graham and Lily, of course, obviously. Yeah. And we moved over. And we moved another, I would say double that. So another 800 meters away, and we could still hear this guy. And he was in this woman's face shouting at her, and he was on the phone to somebody at the same time. Like, he was not Sarah. A normal, irrational human being. That is the idea of provocation.
Yeah.
And even in that moment of me being like, that guy is not in any way thinking like a normal, straight human being. There was nothing that could have happened for me to sit on a jury and think, well, whatever he does in that moment, he's not in control of it. So yeah. Therefore, he shouldn't be held responsible for his actions.
Yeah.
Because you are making the decision as a human being to not be in control of it.
You are actively going, I want to be out of control.
And that wasn't, there was nothing violent happened.
It was
there was a whole load of violent intent. And it was terrifying. And I was so watching upsetting. This girl be like, and I was like, why are you following this fucking moron? Please get away from him. Like, but I couldn't be on a jury and know this and be like, oh, well, yeah, no, that's not his fault.
It's insane, Sarah Jane.
He's not responsible. Like, he's not insane.
He's not insane. And there was no, they couldn't even bring that because they knew that it wasn't going to work because he isn't insane. Oh, my God. So in 2018, Murphy's third trial began, and he was once again convicted of the murder of Olivia Dunleavy. Olivia's family hoped this would be the end of their incredibly painful journey. But in 2020, Murphy appealed again. His team argued that bad character evidence was used against him. However, the High Court said no and upheld his conviction.
Good. Should have gone out the first time.
Yeah. So Darren Murphy was sentenced to life in prison. Outside the court, Olivia's mother, Anne, spoke to the media. She said, our hearts are broken over this. He's the one dragging us through all of this, and he was the only one that was there. He murdered her. For 7 years, Darren Murphy held the Dunleavy family at emotional ransom. I haven't been able to grieve for my sister, Anne told Marie Winnermask, having to fight for justice for her. Anne, Olivia's mother, said that they have felt some relief, but the journey has been insurmountable. After 7 years now, we have that behind us and we can start grieving properly. Our hearts are broken over him, dragging us through all of this. Three trials and two appeals will kill you. I don't know how we're sane. It's a disgrace. This was hanging over all of us for the longest time, she told the Irish Examiner. So the Dunleavys did not want Olivia's name to disappear. And in 2020, they called for the antiquated law of provocation to be changed. So we were told that the law of provocation hasn't been changed or amended since hanging was legal in Ireland, and told the Irish Examiner.
In this case, bring it back.
Yeah. It really needs to be revamped. The whole justice system does, because you'd be really ashamed. This shouldn't be happening. It was a black and white case. He admitted doing it. He savaged her and tried to hide it, and it only broke down in tears when he was caught. So Murphy was successful in using the law of provocation to appeal his conviction twice. Many experts believe the law is used in a gendered way to protect men who perpetrate violence towards women, 1,000%. Dr. Fiona Dobson in the Irish Examiner explained that the law was, quote, about chivalry and the right to defend honour. So this law would have been around back when landowning was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And the way that you dealt with your issues was two men would duel. And it was seen as like a noble thing to do. And like, if you shot someone, it was because you were provoked to do so. It's 2025.
Mm.
Get rid of it. So.
I'd love to duel.
Whether.
I challenge you to a duel.
Whether we still need it in modern times is questionable. And there's a strong argument to get rid of it. So the lack of clarity and understanding of this law has led to a number of cases being successfully appealed. So. This law has caused loads of people to get their cases overthrown. Judge Carney, who passed away actually, called it, quote, a graveyard for judges. Because he was like, we passed down a sentence and then they're like, we're appealing it because of the law of provocation, and then it just sits there.
Mm.
Liz Dunahy, I think is her name, wrote a fantastic piece in the Irish Examiner entitled Special Report, Family Waited 7 Years for Justice and Doesn't Want Others to Face the Same Ordeal. So in it, she spoke to members of the bar who explained how problematic and archaic the law of provocation is. So where the lack of clarity or confusion comes into is the fact that it is a subjective situation. So this member of the bar told Liz, when someone says, I was provoked, the law as it stands in Ireland, unlike in the UK, says that you must look at it from a subjective point of view. You must look at the defendant's mind and decide whether or not they were provoked. In England, it's different. You look at it from an objective standpoint. So the jury could look at it from a standpoint of 12 ordinary people and ask, would they be provoked? So that's why it's different. It's different in Ireland and England. The English one probably makes more sense. Because
it's asking the jury to be like, in this circumstance,
how would you react?
And in the things you've just learned. So in this thing where he's saying, oh, I learned that she wanted a man to come over and have sex. How would you respond? And any normal sane person would break up with her. I'd leave.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, okay, well, that's awful.
Like, how would
and
you,
my heart would be broken.
How would you?
But I wouldn't stab her six times.
How would you as a human with empathy and a thought process?
Oh, okay, right. That is a better way of looking at it.
Pressure has been put on experts to reform the law, but it has fallen on deaf ears. So in New Zealand, the law was overturned overnight due to public outcry over a man being acquitted for murdering his partner. I remember this case. And overnight, they were like, get rid of this law. Same thing they did with firearms. It's amazing now certain other countries can't do that. So the bar experts...
I think America alone, we've said no... Why do you have to bring them into this?
Because I love getting a dig in.
I know, but actually, I apologise.
No, I don't apologise.
It was unnecessary.
I said what I said.
Every week we beat the shit out of America.
No, I don't apologise. I say it again, double down.
Unnecessary.
The bar expert believes it could be a long time before Irish law follows the same route. So these are the changes the Dunleavys want to see, and they're still fighting for this. This is from the Irish Examiner verbatim. So number one is the law of provocation. This defence was used by Darren Murphy and his legal team to appeal his conviction twice. Many judges, lawyers and the Law Reform Commission have called for changes to this common law defence used widely in murder trials. When there's judges and lawyers and the Law Commission going, hey, we need to change this. Maybe you should change it. So two is an exclusion zone. Anne Dunleavy and her family would like to see exclusion zones like those imposed on sex offenders or barring orders like those used in abusive relationships to be imposed on murderers. Absolutely. This, she said, would spare the victim's family particularly Olivia's children in this case, from the further trauma of seeing their loved one's killer near their home. The concept has been called for by Sinead O'Leary, who was brutally stabbed in an attack that killed her best friend Nicola Sweeney in Rochestown, Cork. We cover this.
Yeah.
Just kilometres up the road from where Olivia was killed. 3 is longer jail terms for murder. Yep. Murphy is technically eligible for parole this year after serving 7 years in jail.
Yeah.
And although Anne says that a new parole act, which would see minimum jail term for life extended from 7 to 14 years, is some improvement, she thinks that taking someone's life should mean life in prison for murderers. 4 is less escorted day trips for murderers. Olivia's Dunleigh's family were horrified to hear that Darren Murphy was back in Olivia's previous hometown of Passage on escorted day release to visit a grave last year. He was back to see his mother in Marymount, who was dying during the trial, which is one thing, but then he was back in Passage to visit a grave. Visiting a grave is a luxury. We were horrified when we found out he could do that. It should not be allowed.
Are they now visit graves?
Apparently. He did. So Darren Murphy is in a position to apply for parole this year.
And he will.
Yeah. And although the family find it maddening and upsetting, they have resolved to keep fighting to keep him behind bars. The family don't believe that his alleged good behaviour in prison should mean he should be paroled. That would drive you mad. It is like it is all happening again. He is after being a good boy. Because he is a good boy, he's in prison. It's a pity he wasn't a good boy before he went to prison and left my child alone, Anne told the Irish Examiner. Olivia's daughter breaks my heart. She said, he's the reason I have to visit my mother in a graveyard. I don't think good behaviour should be taken into account when he's taken our mother from us.
Oh my God.
She's a little boy now. She's a little, I can't remember her son's name, but like she's like the hardest part about it is being like, I don't have my mum to turn to go.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, my mum's an idiot, but I ring her when I need to figure out how long I took.
Yeah, there's something about that thing where you just pick up the phone and ring your ma.
Yeah, like especially, they had a rash and I was like,
I don't have kids, so I understand. Yeah. But like you, like I've seen Yvonne, I've seen Catherine, it's just ringing your mum and being like, you've done this.
Yeah, yeah, no, like honestly, you Lily know? Has a rash at the minute from she's allergic to the sun.
Yeah.
And I was like,
ring your mum?
Yeah, just ring your mum. Like you just
it is, there's like a level of,
you know, or if something good happens, you ring your mum, she takes good out of it. But anyway. you ring your mum.
There's that
you look. Like see your mum, you like just like stupid shit. Like yeah. My mom sends me pictures of the sunsets that are actually legitimate ones or sunrises when she's up in the morning. Like, and they're the things that like this woman now has never gotten.
Yeah.
Like she's never gotten any of that. And I'm sure her like wonderful family.
Oh, they are doing amazing for her. But it's not the same.
It's your mom.
And like, and they remember their mom. It's not like they were young enough to forget her.
Mm.
They remember her. They loved her. They remember how much she loved them.
Yeah.
And then to have a man stand up in a court of law and say, the reason that I murdered your mother is she provoked me by sleeping with other men. Well, none of it was true. And have a jury sit there and go, well, we don't know. And then have a solicitor say, well, I don't know, maybe your mum did something wrong.
Yeah.
The family will continue to fight to keep Olivia's memory alive and to make sure Olivia's children and grandchild know what a wonderful person she truly was. They also want to keep other women in Ireland safe from Murphy. Anne, Olivia's sister, told Maru in her mask, I want Olivia remembered and I want him recognised. I want every woman in Ireland to know his face.
Fair play to her.
And that is the case of the murder of Olivia Dunleigh. Her family are still fighting to get the law of provocation, which is such utter horseshit, overturned. I mean, there's a difference between the law of provocation, because when people talk about the law of provocation, it's usually used in this like idea of a fleeting madness where it's like, you pissed me off and I snapped. That's a separate law to, say, a woman who has been abused her entire life and decides, I can't do this anymore, and murders an abusive partner. They are two, because I saw somebody arguing about this and they were like, it's two totally separate things. Consistent denigration and abuse by a person is vastly different than you being like, she said a mean thing, so I stabbed her six times in the throat.
Yeah.
So that law needs to skedaddle. Like, New Zealand are one of those countries that are literally like, hey, we're just going to fix this.
Yeah.
Bam, bam, it's fixed. But for some reason, our country loves antiquated bullshit. It's like the law of fairies. Well, maybe he saw a fairy. We can't get rid of that.
Watched the thing today. Remember when they were building the one of the motorways, and there was like, it was on the news.
Is this Ferryford thing?
And they were like, they found themselves unwillingly in the center of a ferry for indeed the news.
Of course it is.
And the construction company stood down.
Yeah, of course it is.
They were like, they're deeply concerned about the effects of the curse of the fairies.
Like we were. That was a genuine fear for me when I was growing up.
That was on the news, and it was less than 10 years ago.
Ireland needs to get its absolute shit together. I know we think that like diddly eye shit is funny sometimes, and I get it, but this is not funny. This is antiquated, dangerous, and it is allowing men to say the reason I stabbed a woman and burned her body is because I thought maybe she was sleeping with another guy. And there were 3 trials and 2 appeals, and a high court said, sure.
Like if I went home now and I said to Graham, oh, I'd love a grape. And he said, well, all the grapes.
And you said,
is that provocation?
Yeah. That to them, that's provocation. It's like a moment of like, not insanity, but a moment of like loss of control. Mm. But I just wanted to extend my sympathies to Olivia's family and her friends and the village, the town where she came from, because I know that they were also frustrated and angry. Yeah. And also to start to sit there and read shit that's not true about your family in a newspaper, a public fucking newspaper, where some guy is like, yeah, she was sleeping with some, fuck you. Anyway, it made me really angry, and I was doing it today and I was like, I can't wait to tell Sarah Jane about this so I can pass all my anger.
Well, it's worked.
But yeah, just condolences to Olivia's family, and they're badasses, and her sisters are incredible, and her mother is as well, so, and her dad obviously, but like her mum is
I hate
calling people strong, because I don't know if it's strong. I think it's resilience. I think it's you just keep going, because if you don't keep going, what's the alternative?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So
yeah, like I said that to someone the other day, they were talking, someone got really really bad news about a family member, and I was saying obviously Graham's dad passed away really recently, and I was like, in looking back there was loads of moments where I felt like the fact that life kept going on was really difficult and really trivial.
Yeah.
But actually, in looking back, that's the stuff we needed as a family.
That's the point of it, right?
We needed like the communion, or the like little funny moments with like the kids knocking around, or the, you know, the stuff I have to go down to the doctor. Like we needed that, because if we didn't have that, it was like really difficult to like do anything else.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of way. And I was saying it to somebody that's like going through a really tough time, and they were talking about like this terrible news they got, and then they were like, how do you get up tomorrow? And I was like, honestly, I was like, it's not easy. I was like, but sometimes the fact that you have to bring your kid to school and you have to go to work and the car needs to be serviced and you're due a dental appointment while all of that terrible stuff is happening, it makes you able to help and manage and deal with that horrible stuff, because for like a glimpse of your day, you're bringing the car to get serviced and you're not in the trenches.
It's like they say, life is what happens in between.
Yeah, and it is, like, honestly, the things that I think about when we were going through Graham's dad dying are just like stupid, funny shit that was just like, wouldn't have happened if we all didn't just keep going.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I actually listened to your podcast with Panty a while ago.
I'm a self-help guru.
You are. I listened to a podcast with Panty a while ago, Panty Bliss, and they were talking about their HIV diagnosis.
Huh.
And they said that, this is something that always strikes me as well, they would say the day that they got diagnosed with HIV, they walked out of the doctor's surgery and they were so angry that everybody was just living their lives, but they were just told they had HIV.
Yeah.
And it is that thing when something terrible happens where it's like, how dare you all just continue on like this when this thing is happening to me? But that's what life is.
Graham's dad died in the front bedroom of their house, and I was really like, I dropped Graham off knowing that he was going in to be like, this is it. And I was really angry that like their dickhead neighbor was standing outside and the other neighbor was like cutting the grass, and all of like, I felt because like Graham, because where we live, there is like a lack of privacy. We're all on top of each other. It's not like your mom's house.
Yeah, it's not. Do you know what isolated. I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I remember saying it to you, being like, oh, yeah, if anything like that happens to me, put me in a hospice, because I don't want all of that normal. I don't want anybody in my family to feel all of that normality when they're walking. Like, we were walking in and out of the house, and obviously neighbors knew what was happening, but they were like stopping us and asking us how it was going. And I know that they meant that with the best of intentions. They did,
of course.
But all we could be like is like, oh, it's okay.
He's dying.
Or it's, yeah, no, we're getting through it. There was nothing else I could say. Like, the other day, someone down the road from my mom, again, another terrible, someone that lives on my parents' road, their mother is currently dying of cancer. And everybody in the estate knows. And they were coming out and it was the same day that they'd like been told that it had spread. And they were getting the house ready. And I was like, do you need anything?
Yeah.
And she just looked at me and she was like, they're bringing a hospital bed. And she went, that's not good, isn't it? And I was like, no. And then she just hugged me. And I was just like, that is the stuff that genuinely, when you're going through this, like that family have gone through something so terrible, you can't stop.
No.
Because it's the only way to like be like, okay.
It's the only way to be human, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is what we do. Like, you know, people are always talking about, what's the meaning of life? Like, this is what humans do. We go forward.
I have my period and I'm allowed to cry.
It's okay. You're allowed to cry. It's been, I'm sorry that you had to listen to all of this terribleness when you're feeling like this.
But honestly, I think, fair play to her family. Fair play. And we say it every time we do these stories. They're amazing. They're resilient. But that's an incredible resilience to continue.
I don't know if I could.
You would.
I don't know.
You would. You keep going to court.
I just see these
You'd
people.
You'd feel so, like, honestly, I know I'm a vengeance person.
Sarah's coming for the vengeance.
Like, I fucking am. I am. Like, yeah. This thing of, like, you know, don't be so petty.
No, there has to be a level of vengeance, honestly, here. Like, I'm sorry. You don't.
When I tell you I have a vendetta.
Yeah, like, you don't get to get away with these things. You don't get to do these to this to people and then have people, you expect people to be like, that's okay, we forgive you. No. Motherfucker.
And I think we've done stories where other people have done that. Yeah, and it has been like, I genuinely forgive them. And usually there's compounding factors into how that person ended up in those circumstances. But that's a better person than me, because I wouldn't.
No.
I couldn't give a fuck.
No, I don't care. Sometimes when we talk about these cases, especially when the people who perpetrate the crimes, you know, it's... I never want to make an excuse for a criminal. I never want to say,
no.
Well, they did that because, like, I don't ever want to make an excuse for a criminal. But there are some cases where you look at the person that did the crime and it's like, there is no other way that you could have turned out. There is no other path, it seems, that you could have taken because of how fucked up things were. This guy, not one of those.
No.
Because they couldn't even bring in the argument of insanity because they knew he wasn't insane. He was just a possessive, obsessive, controlling narcissist.
Yeah.
Who wanted that woman dead. Anyway, lads. I have nothing, anything nice to say. Do you have anything nice to talk about?
No, just thanks everybody for listening.
For supporting
the podcast and doing all of the good stuff.
And thanks to Kali for everything that he does. We really appreciate it.
I really hope everybody is okay. And yep. We're all getting on. The weather's just been cracking here in Ireland.
Stunning!
And I tell you what.
A girl I work with went to Marbella and it rained the entire time
Spain's
she was there.
Going through it.
Spain is fucking going through it,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
She was like, Emma, it rained every single day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, fucking
I know, but I did say to my dad the other day I was driving. It's the most Irish thing. I said, we must be nearly 10 days without rain.
We need rain.
And then I went to him, there'll be a drought soon.
There will. We're not allowed to use the hoses in Longford at the moment.
Yeah, no one's. Longford water infrastructure, dog shit.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's
nowhere else not to drink the water. Limerick.
Oh, okay, Limerick.
Yeah,
if you're anybody from Limerick, don't drink the water.
Don't drink the water in Limerick.
Buy bottled water, lads. Or boil your water.
Will that work? Boiling your water? Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, everybody, have a lovely rest of your week. We'll be back next week. Come see our show if you can.
Yeah, come to the fucking show, you stupid cunt.
Okay. Well, there we go.
I'll put that in the ad.
Colin, put that in the ad. Okay. Say bye.
Bye.
Holly.
Colin.
I want to free bleed. I want to free bleed. I want to free bleed with no liner, no cups, pads, or tampons for me. I want to free bleed, yeah. God knows I want to free bleed. Enough is enough. I'm really okay with the spilling. drippage I just can't conceal. Clean up on all three, yeah. God knows this is how my nether should feel. It's strange, but it's real, yeah. Don't let the patriarchy tell you how to feel. Get your life back on track. Take the pet out your crack. Be just like Emma Freebleed, baby, like Sarah Jane, just free bleed. Ooh, even Colin.